Blog Talk Radio.
It's September 23rd, 2018. Hello and welcome to Working for a Living Radio Show, where progressives for change present opinions that matter. Tonight, we're joined by co-host Jeff Brown. I'm your moderator, Leroy McKnight. Please remember, good leadership is never about power and control, but rather for the honor and privilege of serving the members in the interest of you, the membership. Announcements. Working for a Living continues to support Medicare for each and every person in the United States. Working for a Living believes in separation of corporations and state. Thank you to our brother MG in the middle of the country. We appreciate that. Announcement number three, Michigan Governor Snyder, in quotes, threatens to use the National Guard for road repair due to labor disputes regarding wages. Announcement number four, Trump administration orders the NLRB staff to step up prosecution of labor unions. Announcement number five, Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner thinks $40,000 is too much to pay teachers and vetoes a minimum teacher salary. Announcement number six, the FBI is investigating the current UAW administration regarding Palm Springs, California expenditures. You know, at some point, if you've been a union member, whether in the UAW or any other union for a long time, it gets disgusting to have to even report this stuff. It shouldn't be. It simply should not be. We have a great union. It's a wonderful, marvelous organization. When run properly, does the best for all of us members. Obviously, that's not occurring, and it's sickening every day when you open the paper and see such news. None of us are perfect, but at some point, it becomes horrible. You know, we've been pretty forgiving as a membership, and we wish for better. You guys got to start standing up, guys, and as gender-neutral guys. Statement. So, you know, get it together. Stop doing what you're doing bad. You know what it is. We know what it is. We've reported on it as best we know how. But stop it. Fix it. And get our country back. That's right, our country. Because what you're doing, other people are mimicking. And the middle class has disappeared, all but disappeared, because of what you've done. Starting with cutting wages in half in 2007. Yeah, you were around, most of you, in 2007. A menial 11 years ago. You got a chance to fix it. Contract coming up. We'll see what you do. So, moving on. We have some email. Thank you for informing us all about the First Amendment, the UAW Constitution, and federal law regarding what is permissible and not protected. And that came in from many states. We heard a lot about that, and we really appreciate your feedback on it. Comment number two. This is directed at Jeff. Jeff, thanks for maintaining your global media contacts so the rest of the world gets what is going on here from a labor perspective. Now, that one came in from Texas. We did hear that from several other places as well. It really, a lot of kudos went to you, Brother Jeff. I know you're in the background here. I see you. Just a second, we'll get you on here. Email number three, comment. Good to see you back, giving us education for our education and protection. And we got a lot of that from all around the nation. Thank you, everybody. We got loves and likes and shares on all of the shows. So we hope that you appreciate what we're doing. We've been a little rocky going through all of this in the last few months. So appreciate your understanding there, too. Thank you. Number four, this was a specific email, a private message that came to me. And this is real concerning, this particular message, comment. It wasn't an email this time, but and the person that wrote it was really struggling with what he should do, this guy. And we're going to cover that a little more later in the show. But the fourth one is, when I share the retiree information from your page and on this page, that it scares people, and I should not share it. This is what he's being told. What is your opinion on what I should do regarding educating the retirees on this matter? Now, location's withheld because if we gave it, he'd probably try to do work your wiles on them, you know. So, a comment on first blush, and we're going to cover it later in the show more. If the union leadership is so ashamed of what they've negotiated, then they should not have negotiated in the first place and should remove it immediately if they're so ashamed. It simply doesn't belong in our agreement. We'll get into that in a minute, but thank you for your message, and I know you struggle with this, and I tried to give you an answer, and the answer that I gave him directly was that, you know, I don't tell people what to do. I inform you and educate you for your interest and your benefit. And you have to think about what's going on, what this information is, and then go to your own core and ask yourself, what should I do? Should I, in the interest of retirees who should know this, in case it actually does occur, should I let them know or not? And that's a personal decision. We're going to help you with that tonight, but because I think you're going to like what we do here on the show, because education is the sunshine, light of day, and nobody should be in the dark on an issue this so weighty and has such import to their livelihood and their well-being. We'll get into that in a minute. Okay, let me bring Brother Jeff on here and see if we can coax a couple of words out of him. Hi, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm okay, Leroy. How are you?
Hey, we're hanging in there, brother. I've been busy since last show. I've been real busy, and today especially busy. You'll enjoy what I had the opportunity to do today when I get into my report. But so how are things in your area of the world?
Well, our plant is on layoff this week. I understand we have two more layoffs coming in October and one in November. But things are really slowing down at the plant. People are starting to feel the financial aspects of it. I know I am, but that's what's going on here in Flat Rock. Another week.
Okay, have you got any more feedback from your friend from France?
No, I haven't. I'm going to send him an email later tonight.
Okay, so what do you think he's going to write on that, Jeff?
going to write on about the answers he received from the two individuals who participated in the interview on their views of President Trump. That's what he's going to write about, why they voted for him, you know, what they expect of him. So that's what he's going to write about. And it's kind of funny.
Could you recap for the listeners why the reporter came here, when he was here, and the information that he was looking for when he was here? You want to recap that for everybody, Jeff? Because there's some people listening this week. I got it last week.
Yeah. This gentleman is a writer for a weekly magazine over in France. I met him back in 2009 during the auto bailouts, and he interviewed me over that. And I was telling him about the trade surplus or the trade deal we have with Japan, where we received five of their cars, and at the same time, they only take one car from us. We talked about how the big three got into the financial crunch they were in. So he came into town last week. He was wanting to find out some information on union members supporting Trump. But the whole week, he couldn't find anybody from a Republican to talk about Trump. He had a lot of Democrats to talk to. But I found two co-workers of mine. They agreed to be interviewed by the gentleman, and he was just asking them general questions about why they voted for Trump. Do they have regrets for voting for him? Just basic to general issue questions like that. When I get the article, I will post it on our page. But I will send them an email today and ask them, how's it going? He was here for 1 week.
Okay, he got here Sunday and stayed through last Sunday, is that right?
Yeah, he came in on the 9th and left on the 16th.
Okay, and while he was here, before your, because you set this up with your people, and you invited six and two showed, which is, you know, understandable, it's fine. Because a lot of people have a lot of stuff going on in their life, and they're working and stuff, and they might have had something come up. But during the week before your interview, he went to, like, restaurants and different places around the community and just tried to engage folks. And he's from France, so he has an accent, obviously. And, it's interesting when you start chatting with somebody and they have a different accent. But he couldn't find anybody, even those that identified themselves as Republicans, that wanted to speak about and on behalf of the President Trump. So that he found that to be quite interesting. Is that not correct, Jeff?
That's correct.
Okay. You gave an opportunity in your from your circle of contacts in the plant and outside the plant, you gave an opportunity to both sides to come and speak, both Republican for and against Trump, and Democrats that might have some good things to say for and or against Trump. Everybody got a chance to say whatever they wanted in your meeting that you set up on Friday last week, correct?
Correct.
Okay, yeah. So, we talked about, you and I talked about, how you should proceed with all of that, and we agreed to that, as I recall, and you went forward just as we just indicated, correct? I mean, that was part of the policy, and I did run that by some other people in our inner circle, and they liked that idea, too, so, the idea that openness and fairness, and it's by you to member no matter what your opinion is, you get a chance to say it, and even if it's to the foreign press, so we try to do that.
Yeah.
Is that, would you say that's a fair assessment, Jeff?
Yeah, I just sat back and listened to their comments. I let them speak freely. I did throw out my little point of views every now and then. It wasn't many, but it had mostly to do with Vietnam and this kind of stuff. But they did a good job, the two individuals. I was happy for them. They said whatever they wanted. I did not use anything against them. In fact, we talked about it all last week. I told them what a great job they did in the interview.
That's nice. I had a chance to follow up with them afterward, too. You know, I mean, and because, you know, they feel strongly about their political position, you know, and
yes.
You know, no matter what we feel, you know, people have a right to express their opinion, you know, so, and you just talked about resistances in the past, I think, as I recall, you know, the Vietnam resistance and other resistances that have occurred, that like the resistance of, name escapes me, the socialist labor leader and that went to prison for 8 years.
Eugene Debs.
Yeah, Eugene V. Debs, that just expressed his opinion about, I think, World War I and went to prison for 8 years. So, you know, we have to allow people to speak what they want to speak. Whether we agree or disagree, we need to have both sides heard. You know, along that line, you know, I had a lot of leadership responsibility and authority in the 90s, and we had quite the autocratic governor, and in his administration, our views were not heard. Labor's views were not heard. In the county commission, it would have been May of 2007, the county commission got to, under the leadership of yours truly, got to 12 to 1. There were 13 people. And the one Republican, the one R, is still on the board. And he has a great deal of respect and very labor-friendly, even though he's from the out-county part of Ingham County. Randy's a very nice man, and any time that we asked for his vote, we got it. So he was the surviving R on the board. And when we got to that, I sat in the Democratic caucus of 12, and I told those elected officials in no uncertain terms, I said, as you go forward and continue to make your appointments to boards and commissions subordinate to this county commission, that you assure your majority on the boards and commissions, say there's six appointed, you'd appoint four friends and four opposition, loyal opposition, I would add, or two loyal oppositions, so a matter of six. So they, and I said, you know, for the purposes of everybody having their input, if we don't know the other side's issues, are you there, Joe? If we don't know the other side's... Okay. Just go ahead and mute then. If we don't know their issues, we have failed are the people that we represent. Because they all have an opinion, and it might be in the best interest of the community that we don't, that we represent. So we always have to make sure we hear every side, because and be open to listen. Understand that, okay? Even though the current administration and the UAW won, it's important for them to listen to what we have to say out here. Okay, that and it, not just that instance; it's every instance. Both sides need a forum to be heard genuinely. Okay, that's how I was able to operate when I was actually elected to do such things, and how I've continued to operate and suggest that other people operate that same way since then. It worked really well for the county commission. They were better because they heard the other side's issues. They really were. And they were held to account from time to time, but we still were able to hear everybody's input and was never, ever suppressed. And if they did suppress it, and you know, if they came to me, I'd make sure they had a form. And they all knew that. So that's important that we do that. So it was nice that you did that, Jeff, and I think it's good for, you know, exhibiting that openness by our team and by you in your local union. I know you've had a union meeting since our last, or no, that was during, but I wanted to ask you exactly how that union meeting went, because this was your first one after you got your membership back, wasn't it?
Yeah, we got a couple dirty looks from some of the People's Choice caucus. That's the caucus that's running local. They don't scare me. They all roll Harley Davidson's in, and wearing their leather vests and acting like a real tough guys, and I'm just not impressed by that. The president.
Bill, someday they'll understand that's not all that impressive, right?
Yeah.
Leadership.
President.
Leadership's impressive. Not.
He didn't read the 13-page letter from the Public Review Board. He just talked about how Article 31 has been changed, and that's how the three of us got our membership back.
Well, you got your membership back because they were wrong, and they changed Article 31 and 33.
Yeah,
yeah, yep. In concert, because they were wrong. So let's just correct that for the record. All right.
Yep. The meeting only lasts like 25 minutes, so it was good. Some of the people who were mouthing off during the last year was real quiet when I walked by them. They didn't even want to look at me.
Yeah, they're ashamed, Tom.
Yeah, and that's fine, too. I really don't care.
Yeah, and it, you know... Yeah, that your presence is, speaks for itself, okay? And
mm-hmm.
and there isn't, shouldn't be any real ill will, you know, because when people are wrong, they're wrong. It's that simple. You know, if we're wrong, we admit it, and, you know, and try to move forward. Because in the
mm-hmm.
end, you know, this is an important time in our history. You know, we're, I was talking to my bank on how to perpetually fund all of these things that we have going on the website and some other things, and so that in 200-400 years from now, when people look back at this very extraordinary time for unions and for our country and for the masses of our country, the whole population, and for the membership of unions, this is, we're making history here, brother, and all of us, and we all have to be real careful on how we proceed through all this. I mean, we can overreact, we can be angry, or we can come together and work against evil forces and against those who would suppress labor, wages, and working conditions, hours of employment. And hold them down. I suggest we do the latter. We just go ahead and work together and try and, you know, work against. You know, I coined a term called the Powellist. That's anybody that supports the ideology of the Powell Memorandum of August 23rd, 1971 by Lewis M. Powell. And you're well familiar with that, Jeff. But anybody that's a Powellist out there, We really need to work against those people. And that doesn't matter if they're inside our union, tangential to the whole process. I mean, on the outside, looking in and maybe have some influence over it, or corporations and their corporate leaders as well. So these are important times, and we need to come together as a whole and work for the best interest of the members and make sure that our not only our members but our country starts to get our middle class back. This is very important, or this is not going to get real pretty if we're not successful. I know you have a Constitution series that you've been working on, and I'd like you to go ahead. I think if you have your Constitution open, I think it's Article 16. You read 15 last time, and then we were going to go into 16, and then the introduction of the leadership team and some things. If it is redundant, we apologize, but I think we left off right exactly where Jeff had finished up with Article 15, which is a very short article, and then he said that I'd get back on 16, and I believe we've abated that. So, Jeff, if you have that available, I would ask for you to continue your series, please. If you don't,
okay, I have
listen,
it open.
Okay.
16 is very, very long.
Right. Just do three or four of the sections, if, you know, whatever seems to. Okay? Thanks.
And there's a lot of bold print in this. So that means this new language is coming from this year's Constitution. Article 16 is initiation fees and dues. Section 1A, each new member will pay an initiation fee. No part of it which shall be considered as a local union fine of not less than $10 and not more than $50 for membership in a local union of the International Union. From the initiation fee paid by each member, $5 should be set aside in the local union's new membership orientation fund to be expanded with the approval of the regional director, and $1 shall be forwarded to the International Secretary Treasurer. Section 1B, a local union may increase its initiation fee within the limits set forth in paragraph K of this section in accordance with the procedures of Article 47, Section 1, Section 1C. Men and women returning from service in the armed forces of the United States shall be exempt from paying an initiation fee upon presentation of military discharge papers of the local union financial secretary within 1 year of the date of their discharge. We'll do two sections and that won't call it today. We write. I know you got some other important things to say. Section 2, bargaining, August 2014. In order to remain a member in good standing, each member shall pay a minimum monthly dues amount to the financial recording sector of the local union as set forth below. A, for those members who work in either private sector or public sector with a legal right to strike, the minimum monthly dues shall be an amount equivalent to 2.5 hours of straight time pay for members working full time pay on an hourly basis, or 1.44% of the gross straight time monthly wages for the members paid on a salary basis for the membership, the members employed part time and paid on an hourly basis. B, for those members who work in the public sector and are legally prohibited from striking, the minimum monthly dues will be the amount equivalent to 1.9 hours of straight time pay for members working full time on an hourly basis, or 1.095% of gross straight time monthly wages for members paid on a salaried basis for members employed on a part-time and paid on an hourly basis. C, for those members paid by the hour, day, week, or month, deduce complications referencing subsections A and B above shall be based on amount earned per straight time hour in the last payroll period work before the dues are payable, including cost of living allowance and any other amounts normally considered as part of the regular pay, excluding shift premium. For those whose earnings vary, straight time earnings in the last month the members worked, including incentive earnings, cost of living allowance, clock hour add-ons, and any other amounts normally considered as part of the regular pay, but excluding shift premiums, overtime, Saturday, Sunday, and holiday pay. Subsection D, for those members paid on a part-time basis or those members paid on a salary basis, where number of hours of work in a weekly week vary and or regularly have no relationship to a normal work week, the dues computation shall be based on their straight time gross earnings in accordance with subsections A and B and above. E, the minimum dues required for certain negotiation payments and bonuses, such as contract signing bonuses, profit sharing payments, shall be calculated as set forth in 1.44% of those members who work either in the private sector or public sector with the legal right to strike, and 1.095% of those members who work in the public sector are legally prohibited from striking. F. Nothing in this article shall prevent any local union or unit of an amalgamated local union establishing in accordance to the provisions of Article 47 dues in which greater amount than provided in this article in any local union or unit at which at the time the minimum monthly membership dues are increased pursuant to the provisions of this article as dues in a cheaper amount than the minimum monthly amount of the change without the necessity of additional local unions or membership in such local union dues shall continue until local unions or dues. Who's in my places here? All dues established by this article shall be uniformly required if all its members by each local union or unit of amalgamated local union except as specified exoneration or special arrangements may be granted to Section 11 of Article 13 or Article 17 of this article. Part 17 of this article. G, this is a long one. Okay. Article 16, Section 2A and Section 2B shall be subject to reaffirmation of the 37th Constitutional Convention in June 19, 2018. Not reaffirmed minimum monthly dues shall be reverted back to 2010 levels. All other pertinent sections of this Article 16 shall be adjusted accordingly. We're going to stop there, Leroy. The next section is three.
That's fine, Jeff. Would you recap a little bit on the overall of this? Is more about dues, how they're collected, and who has to pay what. Would you say that's the summary of what you just read?
Yeah, this one really affects our part-timers and our public employees, state workers, and how much dues they have to pay. I know we talked about time workers paying a different amount every month. A few shows back, but most of this is new language from this year's Constitution Convention.
Okay. So they changed a lot of that, and it's just probably minor changes, but something they felt strong enough to get changed in the Constitution. And the initiation fees, I believe it's more defined, and how the use of that is been put into black letter print this time. So, yeah, so that's you're seeing a lot of changes in this portion of the Constitution. So that affects everybody. All right, so I hope everybody paid attention to that. That's important stuff. Okay, so. All right. I'm going to keep my information on artificial intelligence and autonomous vehicles for last. This is very, very interesting information. I'll just preface it by the fact that I had, you know, I interact with a lot of professors and PhD students and students in general in the community here, just because I have that opportunity. And I had an opportunity to interview for an hour and a half today one of the leading foremost authorities on artificial intelligence regarding vehicles themselves. It's just amazing stuff that's out there, much of which I have promised not to make totally public because some of it's very proprietary, but I'll hit the top portions on this, and I think you're going to find it very interesting, folks. So you're not going to hear this very many other places, so just hang with us a little bit. We're going to keep this probably right to an hour tonight, so if that's all right. We got about 22 minutes, and I think I can get through my report in that much time and close the show out for an hour, and that should keep everybody, with the ability to stay with us, because it does get a little long sometimes. I know last week went 90 minutes, and this is in the end about you and your attention span and everything else. So, let me start my report with part of the contract, and I have the GM contract, and Jeff has the Ford contract, obviously. And I'm gonna we read the paragraph one of the General Motors agreement. I'm gonna read 2 and 2A. It shouldn't take too long here, so. These are foundational, and they're real important to understand as we marshal ourselves in an effort to take on this contract and hold our leadership to account. And we're going to go through this right now line by line, but we may jump to some other more specific areas that need attention, and there's some of the stuff that we'll forward resolution. And if you feel that you want to write a resolution, I want to give credit to another show that simply said, don't put a target on yourself. And this is recently. Don't put a target on yourself. Just go and vote no. Well, on the contract, that is. And that's okay. We're not, criticizing that at all. But not to put a target on yourself is important, because this team, I can point to, and we can point to, three people who have arguably been fired because of being supporters of ours. One's gotten back to work. Thank you. Thank goodness. Three people, one of whom is on this radio show tonight, lost their membership for the better part of a year and prohibited them from running for office. And Jeff openly announced that he would nominate me once elected. So that sort of took out a nomination and virtually everybody else that was fired or lost their membership would have had the opportunity, had they had an opportunity to run, they would have nominated. We did have some nomination support at the convention, but that got scared off. So, and the retirees of a local union were merged. It happened to be from my hometown where I grew up, many of whom I know personally, perhaps went to school with a lot of them, knew them from the neighborhoods, played with them when they were kids, and in, you know, adolescents, and certainly would have supported the team should they have ran and been successful. As a delegate, they would have nominated as well. There's people that have said they'd sign affidavits to that effect. Very popular individuals in that area and in the retiree ranks. But they were prohibited because of the strategic moves that prevented them from running for office or voting for anybody that support us in the local unions once they merged. So there's been a lot of games played and attacks made. You know, we can't point to anybody that did them. But one of the things we can say, at some level, this is no longer a coincidence. Okay? Six people, three lost their job and three lost their membership, and a whole local union retiree group was prevented from running for office or voting for office that were supporting, openly supporting us. So you do your own assessment of that. I have mine. Point is, don't put a target on your back in this upcoming contract time. We already have them on our back. If you have something that you want to have considered, we'll be happy to accept that and receive it and post it on workingforaliving.com and then get those where they're printable so that people may simply print those and submit them to their own local union for consideration. We don't care what it is. If you want help rewriting it, we'll help you do that as well. You know, we have some time for all this. We need to consider all of it. But don't forget, there's an election coming up in November. And, you know, I've said before that there's some important elections in my lifetime. And the last few, I haven't been out there saying this is the most important one ever. Because they've been sort of important, but not, you know, earth-shaking. I mean, we've had some re-elections of people that were our enemies, so to speak, and they were going to get reelected. So, yeah, it was important. But I'm going to tell you something. With what's going on in our country, this is probably the most important election of our country's time. Not just my lifetime, or older or younger people's lifetime, but of our country. Our democracy is at risk. If you haven't seen it yet, I encourage you to go see the movie, Michael Moore's movie out. I was fortunate enough to see it with a young Politico friend of mine on Friday, the first day, at his recommendation. And I was really pleased that he invited me, and he's blind, so I had to drive. So, and we enjoyed it. We discussed it afterwards, and it's an amazing piece of work. But it points out, in no uncertain terms, that our democracy is at risk. The very democracy we live in is at risk. So let's kind of focus on that for the next 6.5 weeks or so. And keep in mind all of what we're talking about here and what we'll get into. But this is important stuff, folks. Real important. And encourage everybody to get out and vote. You have a little while to register to vote. We don't care if you're red, green, purple, blue, orange party, pink party, we don't care. Rainbow party, we don't care. Go register and vote. There's more people not voting now than there are voting. And that's scary. And every one of them have an interest because they're likely on the lower end of the economic scale. Have a self-interest in going out and vote. Not everyone, but most of them. So encourage your friends to register and vote. Here in Michigan, when you get your driver's license, you have an opportunity to register. So a lot of Michigan, a high percentage, is registered. Whether they vote or not is another story. So please register and vote this election. And again, we don't care who, but you know where your self-interest lies. That's all we'll say about that. And we're going to try and support working candidates, or candidates that support people who work for a living. And we've been doing that for a while now. By the way, Gretchen Whitmer, I was able to see her. She's governor candidate for Michigan. I've seen her a couple times since the show. We had her on a show, did a special show just for her. It's about, we had her for 13 minutes on the show, and it was about a 20-minute show, 1st of August. If you want, that's available. You can go back through our .com or any one of the iTunes or Stitcher or right on Blog Talk Radio and see that. Or listen to that show. It was, I think, a very nice show. But she said, thank you for allowing her to be on the show. Thanks to all the listeners. Thanks for this. There was actually people that indicated she'd heard, that they heard her on our show and went and volunteered for her the next day to help get out to vote. So if you are part of that group, that team, please do that again. And she said she'd like to be back on again. So we don't know if we're going to be able to get her because, you know, her schedule's tight as well. The coordinated campaigns are up and running. The one in Lansing is on Holmes, just south of, or it's on Cedar, just south of Holmes, on the southwest corner, Cedar and Holmes. So if you're interested in going and helping, that's the one here in Lansing, Michigan. I know Jeff is probably going to find out where the one there is. We're trying to get some people on to tell us what they need, and we'll see if we can affect that between now and next week and maybe have them on or do a special show for them. Let me get to paragraph 2 of the contract because that's the first part of my report. 2, in case the UAW shall be certified as the bargaining representative for any additional bargaining units or if recognition is extended without formal certification, the matter of including such unit under the terms of this agreement shall be negotiated between the industrial relations staff of the corporation and the international officers of the union. Now, just a second. International officers include the president, the treasurer, 3 vice presidents, and all the regional directors. So all of those individually or in concert would have the authority to do what they just talked about here. Now, let us continue. It being understood that plants producing cars, trucks, bodies, or automobile parts similar to the material now being produced by plants covered by this agreement shall be included after giving the due consideration to any local wage classifications, rates, understandings, or practices as may exist. Paragraph 2A, separate agreements will be negotiated for bargaining units not falling into the above classifications. And that concludes 2 and 2A. Next week we'll work on 3. So that says that they can expand this agreement to other entities as they may come to be, either by the corporation or its subsidiaries, and you're seeing some of those pop up from time to time, and they'll be considered like General Motors Subsystems LLC. They've created that, and that isn't, they have their own set of issues that they work under. And then I know in Jeff's plant, there's actually some subcontracts in part of the affiliates that are part of his local 3000. And we know the chairperson in one of those. And Jeff, do you want to, without saying her name, it's a woman chairperson, by the way, without saying her name, do you want to give us a little description about how that operates in your local?
Yeah, we have several different units in our local. This one in particular unit is the, let's see, they are the janitor crew for every sport plant in the country. They have their own contract. It's very weak. I've read it. It's 16 page long. And the chairperson who had the position is no longer the chairperson. There is a new chairperson since the election. And which drives me crazy just thinking how that happened, because the original chairperson was acclimated 2017 at the nominations meeting. So I need to find her and talk to her. I did see her at last Sunday's meeting, only for a few minutes, and wasn't able to ask her a lot of questions. But yeah, we have, I believe, 5 or 6 different units in our local. And that's just one of them. Of course, the Flat Rock plant is the biggest, Flat Rock assembly plant. So that's what's going on with Roy. I have to find out why she is no longer the chairperson.
I did have a little conversation, well, extended conversation with this chairperson. And she indicated to me that she's been taken off the executive board because there's a requirement of having 52 members in a unit to be on the executive board, for that chairperson to be on the executive board. So she's been removed. There's not 52. She doesn't represent more than 52. But she indicated to me that she's still the chair. So they can't just remove that from her. I mean, they can mess around with if she's on the executive board or not, but she's still elected as chair. And I think she is still, Jeff. So if you want to clarify that, I mean, I could stand corrected, but that's my understanding in my conversation with this. She's a very good, staunch union person. Let me tell
yes.
you would be well-served. And, of course, her husband works there too, and she gets a lot of information and, you know, support from him. So.
Yeah, he's a skilled trades person, and I've known him since I hired him. I will contact her to make sure what her situation is.
Okay.
So,
So that was, again, that was just mine. So, okay, yeah. Well, thank you, Jeff. And let me proceed with the, I got two more items I want to discuss here. And the one deals with the 2015 pension language. Let me preface this by saying there is federal law called the Pension Protection Act of 2006 that was written, approved by both houses of Congress at the time. They were controlled by a group of legislators with R behind their name in both houses, House and Senate, and it was signed by the then President George W. Bush in 2006. The Pension Protection Act says that if pensions funding levels fall below 80%, that the supplements for pensions will be ended, that any and all buyouts that come out of pensions, so if you're thinking about having a buyout and a pension fund is below 80%, it's not going to happen. So And if the supplements, any and all buyout expenditures from the pension, because the buyouts that you get come out of the pension fund. They don't come out of the corporate general fund, even though they're going to benefit dramatically because of the wage, high wage person leaving and the younger, low wage person coming into work. They benefit enormously by that. And so these $60,000, $80,000 buyouts have benefited the corporation at our expense because it comes out of our pension fund. And that's just not GM, it's Ford, Chrysler, and General Motors as a whole. So the language is written for all pensions, by the way, so it's federal law. And the other thing that occurs is that the vested portion of your pension goes to the lesser of the public pension benefit guarantee corporation. You hear about how the government's going to protect your pension all the time. Goes to the lesser of that, and or the lesser of the PBGC or the pension fund itself. In our case, the lesser of it is in almost all cases, because everybody's pension's in, you know, different. But in almost all cases, the lesser of is our pension, because the PBGC would pay more. And thus, they don't consider our pension on a single employer. They don't consider ours in the value of that. Calculated. So, and that's something that I've put in a request to speak to one of the elected officials that's on the PBGC, and I expect that to happen sometime before too long, and discuss exactly what I just said, because it's just incorrect that ours is not being calculated in that. So that's getting a little deep, but that's what the law says. Okay. Now, the law can be appealed, okay? In other words, like the Teamsters did, they appealed the IRS ruling that their pension had to be cut, okay? And they got it forestalled. They, you know, they're not getting that 50% cut. They're still getting their full pension. And they're working real hard in the multi-employer side, because that's what most of the Teamsters and that Central States Pension Fund was multi-employer. In other words, you work for several different companies and they put in as needed to your pension fund. But it's underfunded for a lot of reasons. So they were able to appeal and got it forestalled. And now they're trying to fix it. You know, I want to give a plug to Senator Sherrod Brown out of Ohio, U.S. Senator, that's doing yeoman's work, and that's a word, that's gender neutral, yeoman's work on trying to get that reversed. And I know we have some senators at the federal level here in Michigan doing the same thing. I know they didn't support somebody that everybody thought they should support, but let's take a look at it and see if they're going to support our pensions, because that's kind of a whole lot more important than an individual, because this is money out of our own pocket. So the problem that occurs for us in the UAW, especially the Detroit 3, in the 2015 agreement, almost verbatim, this language, well, exactly verbatim, this language from the Pension Benefit, I'm sorry, for the Pension Protection Act 2006 was placed in our agreement. Now, what that means is there's no appeal to the federal government to try and get this forestalled or reversed. In other words, if it falls below 80% of funding levels, fall below 80%, the pensions get cut by 50%, and that's the vested portion of your pension, because the supplement goes away. So if you're under 62 and the vested portion of your pension is some $1,400 or $1,500, you would go to $7 or $750 a month should the funding levels fall below 80%. Automatically, not appealable to anybody because it's a part of a union contract and it's automatic. There's no appeal to the government on our contract. Those persons who put that in our contract now say, oh, when you make that public, you're scaring people. To the brother that sent me the private message, I'm making it public right now. And I hope everybody shares this show. In the General Motors contract, and we don't find it in Ford or Chrysler that we can find, in the General Motors contract, in the pension fund, the pension supplement, where the actual board of the pension fund gets its authority, there's a separate supplemental agreement called the pension plan. Appendix A, some call it. And that includes this language. And it also says General Motors is relieved from any more obligation to the pension fund after 2008. So those of you that are worried about scaring the members and the retirees, current or future retirees that are in the pension plan, those that hired in prior to September of 2007, the end of that contract, and arguably up until it was ratified, early in October 2007. So that date is, you got to ask your own rep about whether you're in it or not. You know if you are, okay? So, but if you're in the plan, this language is subject to affect you. And for those people that are ashamed of what they did, because it might scare people, shame on you. You shouldn't have negotiated this. You should not have negotiated or allowed it to be ratified. You shouldn't have approved it, because guess what? The International Executive Board, prior to ratification, has to approve every word of every contract that's ever written by anybody that's UAW represented, whether it's Ford, GM, Chrysler, Aerospace, Ag Implement, IPS, Independent Parts Suppliers, or TOPS, Technical Office of Professional Services. Any of the divisions of our union have to have, once a contract has been reached, then that's submitted for approval by the International Executive Board and then sent for ratification. Okay, so everybody understands that our international union approved this. And if they're ashamed of it, then they have two things. Declare it null and void like you did the GMS. Suspend it. Or ask that it be removed under the GMS authority that's still out there, where these two, the parties at the international and the corporate level will meet and cause language to be created or removed from the contract. In other words, there's still a living agreement out there. That question came up during the course of this past week. Do we really have a living agreement? Yes, we do. Because it can be changed by authority above the local union. between the parties. And that's very well outlined in the GMS and Appendix K for Ford. And I think it escapes me, the Chrysler language that has that in it, but it's there. All of the agreements, the Detroit 3 agreements, contain this language for retirees. Retirees, I will say this, our pension fund at General Motors was $62 billion in 2009 at the bottom of the economic sine wave, the nadir of the economic sine wave in 2009. We're at the apex, arguably, we're at the apex, the top of the economic sine wave now. And the pension fund, unlike the market that's gone up 300% from 6,640 to 26,700, and that's almost 350% almost. Okay. And the pension fund has stayed pretty much the same, and it's gone down $3 billion. It has not appreciated with market value. It's not increased. It hasn't gone up. Now, there's arguably all kinds of things that's been done that caused that. Some of which is they're just limited on what they can invest in a pension fund. But we still should see some appreciation, some increases. In the past, I know a lot of you are very young, relatively, and you haven't seen many market downturns. In the past, when the pension fund has gone down, the corporation has oftentimes, at some considerable pain, had to put in billions of dollars to keep it funded fully. Okay? It's kind of funny because there's actually some language out there in the federal law that says it's supposed to be funded fully, but at the same time, if it falls below 80%, you're going to cut it in half. So, but this is in our contract that they cut it in half at 80%. At 60%, a funding level goes away. And in General Motors' case, there's no obligation to put any more money in it by the corporation. The only thing that would reverse it is market conditions change and it move up. But we saw that it didn't move up and appreciate during all of this big run-up of 300, over 300%. We'll just call it 300 plus. And it didn't appreciate. So it's either market conditions or enough of us retirees die off to cause it to ascend at a higher level than what it is at 60% or 80%. If that scares you, you should have been more active in this last election for the UAW. We told everybody, didn't we tell everybody here on the show too, right?
Yes, we did.
A couple times. It's a pinned post on Working for a Living page. If you're not a member of that page, we invite you to come on by and say hi. Join the page. Okay. If that scared you, I hope it did. I hope every one of you retirees that just heard this and share it with all your friends, call Solidarity House ad nauseum. Get calling down there and just tell them to remove that from the language. I don't care if you're Ford, GM, or Chrysler, or any other smaller unit that has the same language in there, and they're putting it in everything lately. If you have it in your agreement, in your pension plan, and there's fewer and fewer defined pension plans, we'd like to see more of them. Everybody should have one, as far as we're concerned. We've discussed that at length. So if you are scared, this bothers you, call them. And I'm not talking a little bit. I mean, call them every day of the week. If they get 500,000 calls, and that's about 400,000 of us totally, and there's some surviving spouses. So we'll just round it off at a nice half a million every day. Think about it. They get 500,000 calls every day at Solidarity House. Yeah. That'll make your liver quiver, won't it? Down there, 8000 Jefferson Avenue, Detroit, Michigan. They'll change their ways. And they'll show support for sanity that comes from this show versus the insanity that's going on in our union. So take some action. Do it. So that concludes that portion of the report. I'm sad this is there. I'm sad it's scaring everybody. But the people that are there signed off on it in one form or another. The current leadership approved it in one form or another. There's a couple that came out of the woodwork that weren't executive board members previously, but they were high enough that they had influence and say-so regarding it. We didn't hear anybody saying no. It was full steam ahead, damn the torpedoes. And that's why we have FBI looking into our union. So my last report, last segment of my report. Jeff, do you have anything to add to that, by the way? Do you want to say any more on that?
No, I'm fighting the same battle trying to educate my members and my parents over this language. They tell me it's not true. And I keep telling them then why it isn't in the contract. They just don't want to believe that this language is going to affect them. But they didn't believe me years ago when I told them all we weren't going to get anything from the Ford equity of sacrifice agreements either.
Yeah.
But I proved them wrong. So.
Well, it's there. I mean, it's pinned. It's a pinned post. All three contracts are pinned at the top of working for a living. So, and some people, they see it and they don't realize what it is, and they read it and they go, oh my God, this is bad. And we'll, you know, this was posted in June of 16, and we pinned it sometime late of 16. It's been there for a year, almost 2 years now, pinned at the top of the page. And we still get comments on it. You know, after people come on the page or someone's been there a while, read it, and they'll make a comment on it. It doesn't improve its position. It just, you know, because it's pinned. It's just there, and I feel so strongly about it that I've left it pinned for over almost 2 years now. So, and it's my pin, so nobody can remove it. So I started that page. So that's the hierarchy of a Facebook page. So. Getting to a little more palatable subject here. I had an opportunity today to interview a foremost authority in the manner of artificial intelligence and autonomous vehicles. It's interesting beyond your wildest imagination. I will tell you this, it's coming, and it's going to be here. Whether we like it or not, autonomous cars are going to be here. They have a ways to go, okay? There's a long way from here to there. You've heard us discuss, because on another opportunity, I had to speak with a PhD on the matter of is artificial intelligence here, and the answer is not yet, and it's going to be a long time because pictures are two-dimensional, not three-dimensional, and that is our limiter. Okay, today in my interview I have found out how they're making two-dimensional pictures act as though they're three dimensions. And I will not get into how that's done because it's proprietary and I'm not going to repeat it. Just know that it's there. The problem is it's still two-dimensional and it's by no way perfect. But it is highly accurate. I know the exact accuracy, but I won't tell you that because it is highly accurate. And at low speeds, it's even, its accuracy is even greater. So if you're at expressway speeds, it's extraordinarily accurate as they use two-dimensional pictures to turn it into 3D. And there are key points so that you know if you're somebody that's listening and think I'm just blowing hot air, there's key points that are required, and I won't go into that, but they allow for this to be extraordinarily accurate. So it's not GPS-based. It's not satellite-based. Okay? So the key points method is, and it's still 2D, but they do some really, really cool stuff to make it look like it's 3D. And then the next thing that premised for the autonomous vehicle is what's called lane keeping. And they have artificial intelligence that is what's called machine learning, and it actually learns what the road looks like in your area, and it will update regularly and will understand whether it's curving left or curving right or a severe curve. So that, and this gives you your ability to stay in your lane. And then they have what's called proximity. And we all know what proximity is. So far, it's sideways and forward looking. There's nothing rear looking at this moment because, by and large, cars move forward. Now, without getting into some very proprietary information, I gave this individual a reason to have rear-looking proximity and a call to action regarding that. And that's all I can say on that. As for proximity, you can look several cars ahead of you. And again, it's only forward-looking and sideways at this time. It does not work, so you... auto body shops, take a deep breath and relax. It does not work in inclement weather. The same way that GPS and our satellite TV doesn't work in inclement weather because of the clouds, you know, mess up the TV reception. We all know that if you have heavy cloud cover, your satellite goes away, right, for a period of time. The same thing works for GPS from satellites on your locations. So it just goes away for a brief period. Sometimes, you know, long periods, depending on what kind of storm it is. And it also doesn't work, none of this works in a heavy rain where it can't see, or heavy snowfall, or regular snowfall for that matter. Doesn't work in that sort of weather. In order to overcome some of that, they're doing what's called human sharing, where they share the actions of how a human driver would operate the vehicle in the area that they're at, in the actual area where they're at. So, again, that's about as far as I dare go, because I was, I don't even want to say anymore. I really can't, because this is all proprietary. I was given access to knowledge that is just amazing. But you're not hearing this from anybody else, including the current leadership in your UAW. And one of the biggest things that face us is artificial intelligence and robotics on how we build cars and the methods in which we build cars and what the cars do, and how we need to transition in all of this in order to maintain work for our members and future members. Okay, you heard me say I was prepared to set up a committee regarding all of this should I have been elected president. That wasn't successful. But we're still engaged in making sure that we understand it and pass on as much as we dare pass on to you, because this is, in the end, all about you. We educate ourselves so we can educate you. Okay? And again, there's calculations and methods and systems inside of all of this. I just recapped the top elevate, you know, the top, the peaks of all of these very detailed and interesting things. The memory's still limited. I can say that to the degree that while a robot can control to the millimeter a space 12 feet cubed, and that's about all the memory that they can do right now, and they can use a six-axis robot, several six-axis robots inside of that in coordination with one another if need be, to affect that space of 12 cubic feet to the millimeter. Pick up an egg and move it as fast as you can possibly move an egg and stop within that 12 cubic foot area. And they can do all of that. There are people out there that say our work as we do it is term limited. So we need to transition to the next aspect of work. They're not implementing it yet, but it's, I tell you, the technology exists, and we need to know it and all about it in order to protect our members. This is, in the end, about you. And how well you're served is how well we become educated. Okay, now we're getting a little bit long here. Artificial intelligence is here. This autonomous car is coming along. There's some really cool stuff, and they got some enlightenment based on some of my own concerns. Today, he did, and he's taking that back to their team. So then these PhDs work in groups and stuff like that. So this is stuff that's going to probably be implemented based on what I have indicated to them. But again, that's proprietary because they're going to copyright it. And people benefit. I'm not benefiting, but other people benefit by our interaction, and hopefully the membership will benefit and the public at large will benefit from this. So we'll have the opportunity to build some of this stuff. So that's where the autonomous vehicle information is at. That's the cutting edge. This is the second or third iteration of autonomous vehicle that they're in. This is more than what they had planned originally. So this is cutting edge out there as much as possibly known. And probably some was still withheld from what I was privy to today. But understand, this is it's coming. It's pretty cool stuff, and it's going to save lives. What the information I gave them today that they're going to move forward on is the biggest injury accident type of all. And it will not stop all of them, but it'll stop a lot of them and mitigate the severity of damages in such accidents. And they're moving forward with that, so that's a good thing. They get focused on something, part of it, and of course that was a concern of mine in going into the interview. So I want to thank the individual for allowing me a peek into the future, and I really say the person's name. I hope you found value as a membership in what the future looks like a little bit. We really need to start working on transitioning from what we to what the future is all about, and we need to be paid commensurately to do that. So we'll get as many jobs out of that as we possibly can. and we're going to hold to account the leadership in that regard. So far, they're not doing too good in this area, as far as I know. They're pretty good at spending money in Palm Springs, but I don't know if they're really researching what I'm researching out here with regard to the highest levels of things. One last thing. I was kind of stumbling here or stretching because I wanted to, I couldn't recall it just for a second. These PhDs are some of the most coveted people once they are fully educated. And I'll tell you that the last one, and there's very few people in this arena, the last one that's known that was graduated and got offers in this particular area, got four offers. Three in Michigan that were from $220,000 a year to start, $220,000 a year to start, to $250,000 a year to start, and one in California at $300,000 a year to start. Okay, that's how important this information is. Okay, and these people that have been educated to this degree, understand that these people aren't just walking through. They are some of the smartest people on the planet, math-wise. It's a simple calculation, cost of living versus wages for somebody in that functions at that level. It's a simple, very simple math equation, and they're all about what's best for them. The choice was to go with a 250 here in Michigan. General Motors, your 220 was weak. Mary Barra, a little less dead peasants insurance, and a little more money towards the future of the company that pays all of our members with regard to General Motors. A little less money in the dead peasants insurance, another $30,000 a year to get the top person in the world into your company, because you're too damn tight to spend another $30,000. F for your effort in this area. Failed because you didn't get the person. Failure is not an option for our long-term longevity. So, we went a little longer than we thought. It's now 90 minutes, a minute late because of technical difficulties at Blog Talk Radio. The phone thing was messed up the first couple of times I called, so we didn't get in with this one. So, Jeff, do you have any comments on any of that? And we'll close it right after you give your comments, please.
No, I have nothing to say, Leroy.
Okay. Well, it's now 8:29. I'd like to say goodnight to all the listeners. Goodnight, Jeff, and thanks for everybody listening all around the world, the United States, Canada, Mexico, our friends in the union and non-union, everywhere. Keep up the good fight. Solidarity forever. Goodnight, everybody. Goodnight, Jeff.
Goodnight.